Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete.
Good afternoon, and your Drive Time show, obviously, that's Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. It's Friday, and it's Friday times two for some people. Those are the civil servants, like if you're a teacher, a police officer, just show off. Next week, it's going to be us. And if you're thinking, oh, no, he's definitely jealous. Yeah, I am. That's how broke I am. But, you know, have a wonderful Friday. With all that, introductory sarcasm aside, let me cordially welcome you, wherever it is you are tuned in. I have no idea what that word means. I just stole it somewhere from some fancy documentary I was watching. And now, un momento. I have a co-host to rescue.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and we continue. Well, now today's wherever you're tuned in from, welcome, blah, 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 Home Run, Drive Time Show, Eagle FM, you know the drill. So let's just get to the food. And that is, today's Home Run discussion is based on the, Natural Resources Parliamentary Standing Committee. A different report, I know that about a day or two ago, we did one on green schemes in the Zambezi, Kavango East and Kavango West. And today's discussion is based on the same Parliamentary Standing Committee and same regions. But this one is on the state of conservancies, community-based conservancies. What's going on in these conservancies? And what are some of the findings that the standing committee found on the ground that they documented in the report that is going to serve as our main source of reference for today? And walking in is yours truly, Dwight. So the same standing committee, same regions, but a different point of focus. The previous report that we went through, coming from the Natural Resources Standing Committee, was on green schemes, and this one is on conservancies. So,
yeah, they were busy.
Definitely.
No, they were very busy. I slightly knew, saw it on their socials last year.
Yeah.
But when you now look at it, you go like, okay, so they are producing the reports quicker.
Emphasis on the quicker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because remember Oshikate Haikoto?
Yeah.
That report came out only in end of last year. When did we do that?
No. That's not the worst they've done.
Yeah.
Prefabricated courtrooms.
Yeah, no, but the
from 2015.
No, but the whole discussion in that report for the Standing Committee on Constitution, Constitutional Affairs, and Constitution and Legal Affairs.
Yeah.
All that came out. I attended that public hearing and that engagement with the Standing Committee in 2024.
Yeah.
We had the conversation alongside the National Arts Council discussion about their last section, having the ability to literally kick the whole rest of the act into the water, like a rugby player drop kicking it into the stands. And all that particular discussion literally only started materializing in the middle of last year, 2025.
Yeah.
However, last year, middle of 2025, when these oversight committees were put together,
yeah,
I am now seeing at the start of 2026, probably 7-8 months later, we're seeing the reports of last year's activities,
yeah,
coming out now. So hence I'm describing just for the listeners and for us to get to, you know about, the turnaround time seems to be a lot quicker. Mm-hmm. The oversight reports are coming out a lot quicker. They're being reproduced a lot quicker.
Uh-huh.
And it gets those particular answers that people might have had being answered a little bit quicker and thus being highlighted. However, the downside is these reports first need to be submitted to the National Assembly before anything else.
Not just that. There's proof in this report that it was not done by ChatGPT. Because...
Hey, that executive summary now was killing me. Yeah, that executive summary.
You can tell it was done by a human.
Look. Yesterday's report. No, not yesterday. The day before's report.
Yeah.
The report on the green schemes.
Yeah.
Okay. I was, to be honest, I was a little bit, a little bit strict in terms of that they didn't follow the same format that they started with Kalim Beza with,
yeah,
outlining employment creation, you know, all those
down to, and then ending up with challenges.
Yeah, yeah. All those sub-points, yeah, under Kalim Beza, yeah, they didn't duplicate the same template for the other green schemes.
Nope.
It's sort of like after shutting Gongora, then and they're like, just put in paragraphs. just go with the flow. At least it was a report, but it also showed to us, specifically to you and me, that this report was either hurried towards the end,
uh-huh,
or the report wasn't captured, or the last parts weren't captured as detailed as the first parts of the report, starting from Kalim Beza to Sharing Ongora.
Yeah.
Because you can even see with Sharing Ongora, it literally just fizzled out. They didn't even care about mentioning potential employment creation, even though employment creation is literally in one of the things that they're trying to look
for. Yeah, from Kalim Beza, it became more of like more summarized. Like, you know, you're just embedding things like right next to each other, exactly, so you can just get it over with some type of, type of way.
Yeah. And even then, I should have been glad it wasn't ChatGPT.
That's why I'm saying, I figured, from the beginning of this report, you can tell it's not ChatGPT. You have, just on the cover page, you have National Assembly 8th Parliament and reports on the oversight visit to Conservancy. Someone forgot an N there on Conservancy between A and C. And it's like, yeah, see now, this is what I want to read. I don't want to read ChatGPT.
No, there's a sentence in the executive summary that it flows one way and then it throws me in another direction. I was like,
just go to recommendations. There's something there. But guys, don't get me wrong. You're doing great. It's just that,
polish the sentences, peoples. There's a reason we as journalists have to read up. We're continuously told, read your work accurately and thoroughly through so that you know you don't submit nightmares.
Yeah. On the bright side, no ChatGPT. That's proven.
Okay. On the bright side, yeah.
On the bright side.
Yeah.
Because it's Friday, I'm going to focus on the bright side.
What? Did you remember to wish the people happy payday?
Happy payday. Oh, my birthday was yesterday. They didn't wish me.
So it's tit for tat.
Yeah. Jessica, small e-wallet.
So this is for one person that you like doing this every payday.
I know, right?
The world is savage out there.
No, she's my cousin.
Yeah, people want birthday wishes alongside the chat. Well, bruh. But okay. If that's how you make the world work,
yeah,
I'm happy. But yeah, so where we left off,
on the bright side, no ChatGPT.
Okay, that the bright side is one side.
Okay,
on the other side is, I am so glad to see specifically that the report mentioned that in the one financial year, or let's say it in the 1 year, because the Conservancy is obviously run by communities that live in, around, and within the scope of where these conservancies are based.
Yeah.
And the nice thing is to realize that the conservancies generated 30 million Namibian dollars in income. I mean, if you really want a rural development initiative or program, a sub program, really carrying value and really providing some sort of an aspect of income generation, firstly, because the first thing that people always want to find out is how do we generate income from the resources we've got around us?
Mm-hmm.
And if you elevate this into the broader theme, for example, into the discussion of Wednesday that I attended, regarding the report of the UN Conference on Trade and Development, where the Secretary General Lady was here in Namibia to launch Namibia's particular perspective, even though it's just reiterating, even though in more detailed scenario, but just reiterating what our Bible had been saying on the guide to the Namibian economy,
yeah,
that Namibia needs to diversify. We know it. So yeah, we know the bare bones truth. So the nice thing is, even though those guys were looking at extractive industries, which was also our EITI discussion and last week Friday's, the amendment, the Petroleum Act amendment that the Minister of Industries, Mines and Energy, Modesa Samutse, had submitted in the Parliament the week before that. All these particular actions speak to the same thing that that UN guys were talking about on Wednesday. And we have got that in our planner coming up, hopefully next week or, the week after that. However, no one is talking about community-based or, let's say, community-based or even adequate rural development alongside the other resources that rural communities have to their particular, to their particular disposal. These rural communities obviously they've got the custodianship of managing and running these conservancy areas, which obviously means that tourists would love to come and see what kind of wildlife or way of life exists there. And an income generation mechanism is immediately positioned at accessing those conservancies.
Yeah.
The second is obviously the trophy hunting. And then there's obviously the accrued, or if I can say literally, the direct linkages or the direct impacts from these conservancies is that immediate jobs get created. Now, rural development, Helmut, should be a particular pathway that specifically that I've highlighted in conversations on the China Corner program of last month, January and of December. And these particular things are scenarios where regional authorities have to be at the forefront to provide sort of like the ongoing, maintenance, upgrading and installation of infrastructure for rural communities. So even if you've got a conservancy still should also, or the people or the rural communities that find themselves operating these conservancies should still have access to certain particular things. Meaning, guys, even if it's just a ordinary little two-track interlocked road, people don't know how dangerous a gravel road is. Let me start from that particular point.
So I've normalized it like, basically three different types of road networks. You have a tarred one, you have gravel one, and you have a loose end one.
Yeah.
If you want to go,
but here's the loose end. But here's the thing with the loose end one. The loose end one is literally off the track.
Yeah.
The gravel road one is a designated secondary road. The gravel road one also is, for example, like people of yesteryear or older generations used to tell us, people don't know how dangerous a gravel road is. It is more dangerous than a wet road. It is more dangerous probably than a snow, a road covered in snow.
Gravel?
Yes.
Really?
Because of the loose stones.
Oh, yeah.
Helmut, have you ever seen how savage or brutal the accidents of gravel roads are? The car accidents?
Mm-hmm.
Thank God. Because the downside of the car itself is that
the faster a car becomes, it's almost like the car is lifting itself. You know, if you're driving slow.
Because of the bumps.
Not just because of the bumps that would be there, but also that the car is obviously moving at a faster speed. The car is starting to sort of like lift itself. So if you've observed this before, dear listeners, it's a weird phenomena because anyone would think, okay, why does it not do what an F1 car does? But an F1 car was built for that purpose.
Yeah.
To use aerodynamics to its advantage.
That thing is one of the most heavily engineered thing you'll ever find. Exactly. Aerodynamics and everything is accounted for.
Exactly.
Including the weight of the driver.
And even including the weight of the fuel, even. Do you know that those guys, have you ever seen sports analysis where it says, okay, now your car's got more fuel in it, your car's heavier, you're going to drive slower. In our thinking as consumers outside of F1, if I've got a full car, a full tank of petrol, meaning I can automatically drive further and faster than the guy that doesn't have a full tank. No.
Turns out it's a terrible idea because of the weight.
It adds weight.
Oh.
And none of us have ever thought of fuel that way.
So you're telling me Tim, I know my car have been right this whole time.
Yes.
Oh, unfortunately, yes.
It's just the plainness. Now, the downside is, your car, the car outside of F1, is not built to utilize aerodynamics.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to achieve 120 kilometers on a gravel road, the moment something goes wrong, you are literally airborne. You are flying.
Yeah.
Okay. Everyone knows don't pull the handbrake. Everyone knows that. Don't do that at a high speed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even gonna jokingly say go and try it to see the experiment.
Nah.
It's just gonna end up bad and severe. So never pull the handbrake. Obviously, when you're at a high speed, you pull the handbrake, you instantly lock the four wheels. And immediately what happens?
Inertia is going to give you wings.
The car just jackknifes or the car just flips over. Now, the downside is, Helmut, gravel roads, yes, they're the easiest to maintain because you just need a grader driving up, driving down. So it's two guys technically. The downside is gravel roads are not the best sustainable template. Why? Because here's the thing, Helmut. Gravel roads, in some cases, okay, the nice one that I drove all the way to Okambaye in 2020 was pretty nice-ish. I say pretty nice-ish, but it was the gravel roads that I don't like, that I know from in and around Rehoboth area when I grew up as a kid, is the gravel road that kicks up that massive plume of dust.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when a guy comes from the front and you're coming from the opposite direction.
Yeah.
You guys are both kicking up these massive plumes of dust.
Yeah. Visibility is out through the window.
Exactly. So, firstly, that's that particular scenario. Secondly, if there's a car driving behind you, you're in that car's particular dust plume the whole time. Once again, it's not a nice thing. So, rural development should obviously start from a scenario where we try to actually develop the road networks. I'll say this again. I know we can't eat or live off the world, Africa's best road network.
Yeah.
I know it. But you know what does Africa's best road network actually create? It creates, okay, obviously the direct benefit would be the limited jobs that it creates for that period. But it actually creates
connectivity
that allows rural communities, Helmut, to be accessible.
I think that's one of those things that was emphasized during the State of the Region address by the Ohangwena regional governor. In his speech, he also focused a lot on road connectivity and the significance that it serves in terms of trading.
Yeah, Hamut, if they sort that out, for example, if you take a region like Ohangwena, like when I was there with those other journalists last year in August, Helmut, you cannot be navigate. Helmut, if you did not know the local lingo in the parts there around Enana and, specifically around Enana, you would not know where to navigate, Helmut. If you didn't know someone, I sat there observing our tour guide. His name is Martin. I sat there observing Martin. And everywhere.
How he's making it look easy.
No.
Yeah.
If you go back home, Helmut, you obviously know the area.
Yeah.
But if you are, imagine yourself being there for the first time as a tourist, even if you're in Namibia. No,
you're going to be lost.
You're going to be lost. You don't know the place.
Yeah.
And I sat there observing the tour guide, Martin. And Martin, if there wasn't a pedestrian, you know, just walking along the road,
yeah,
trying to get where they need to go, if there wasn't someone like that there, we would have probably spent another 10 to 15 kilometers driving in a direction, and Martin is trying to remember when last did he see a specific landmark, because we were looking for these various particular landmarks of the previous Ondonga kings, you know.
Yeah.
And we were going back as far as two of the guys before the Germans, or before Namibia's particular colonial chapter. And these particular discussions are things, for example, that's what I remember when I said, you know, we really need to amp up this national heritage project of Namibia, so that,
like, in terms of conservation,
not just conservation and not just of heritage conservation, but also about making upgrading sites. They are immediately under the traditional authorities. They are immediately sort of like what do you call that, protected sites.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to make them visibly accessible so that people know. If you now go, if you come here to Windhoek, you've obviously got the Independence Museum. Then you've got the fort, which is also a historic building. Then you've got the Tintin Palace, which is the Parliament building. And all those three particular monuments together are clustered together with that that church. What's that, that church standing there? The church at the top of the hill from the Independence Museum. You know the church?
Yeah, I don't think I can pronounce that name.
Christuskirche.
Christus what now?
Or just say Church of Christ.
Okay, Church of Christ. Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. But anyway, the Christuskirche, just right opposite the Independence Museum.
Yeah.
All four of them are historic landmarks in Windhoek.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot more historic landmarks across Windhoek, which the tourists are also not aware of, because they are not catalogued, they're not shown, they're not, you know, sort of like maintained as a historic building in some form. Do you know where the old police station, the old prison was?
No. Don't say here.
No, not here.
No, thank God we are not sitting in it.
No, no, not here from us.
Okay, where?
The old prison, I discovered, or not I, it was shown to me, and then I went to go look at the building itself, and it just looked weird, is where you will find the, is where the National Planning Commission guys are.
Huh?
Literally behind the, literally behind GIPF, yeah. If you're coming this, if you're coming to us from this direction.
Robert Mugabe.
Yeah. It's, if you move up with Robert Mugabe, but you're coming with Robert Mugabe to the Parliament building, to the Parliament process.
Yeah.
That specific, there's a little, not a little, it's a significant large earth with buildings in it clustered together. But the immediate one is that you see an old designed building that spans the whole of that yard. If you're walking on that pavement, you've got Trasco on your left.
Yeah.
And you look to GIPF's direction, but you're not standing across GIPF. You're standing literally across the property behind GIPF. That property.
Yeah.
That was the old prison.
Okay.
But not the old prison, like, before 1990. Not where... Don't imagine the Correctional Services prison, that massive thing next to State Central Hospital.
Yeah.
Is it Central or is it standing next to...
No. Central Hospital.
No, it's standing... Yeah, on your it's on your way to Karaduro Hospital.
Yeah.
Not that thing standing here. It was literally an earlier version, the first one they had here before.
Oh, yeah, that complex side was of now I know the facility you're talking about. They were like, say if you're coming from town, like you're headed to Hagigenkop campus.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first one on your right before you get to this health institution just right next to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when you're looking at that particular scenario, for example, we've got those resources. It's obviously it's human-made and human-built, but it's the same thing that this oversight committee literally went to go see. Because they went to go see natural resources, what defines natural resources. The other oversight committee, the previous oversight committee from the seventh parliament, they were going to look at mining activities and small scale miners, which in a way also distracted the particular application of the term, what is a natural resource? You know? So it made things interesting. And it's a good thing that these guys actually also went and looked at the green schemes, because it shouldn't be up to another, let's say another standing committee who was just looking at agriculture. Agriculture is also part of
a natural resource.
Yeah. So I'm glad they went and looked at it, but it's the perspective we're taking. It's literally the perspective. Their report obviously works from a community-based, rural development-based perspective. And I actually want us, Helmut, to achieve the levels that the Chinese achieved when they showed me that village there last year. Just within a year, bruh, they built a little access road from a main road.
Yeah.
So you've got a main road that is a major highway. Then there's a turn off. There's an exit from that main road. And then there's a small access road that leads you up to that village. So it's a main highway, a secondary road, which is tarred. Not a gravel road, tarred. And then the access road leading to the village is also a sort of like semi-tarred, semi-formal structure.
Mm-hmm.
Something that doesn't wash away overnight or, you know, when a rainy season happens. No. When we get there, it is the regional authority that invested into the care, maintenance of the buildings in the village. 7 out of the 15 or so buildings there that were homes and, designated buildings that would act as tourist facilities were designated as inhospitable. That's how old and dilapidated they were. And what are those same governmental authorities do? They literally improved it, renovated them, and literally made them safe for human occupation once again. Gaan nou, Helmut. Gaan vandaag. Go today to conservancy area. Go today to conservancy area. To rural community that has access to conservancy. And then you come and tell me whether you're going to live in the same conditions that you're living in Windhoek.
I don't think I have to run now to learn that.
No.
I've seen a few conservancy areas, so. No. Thinking is fine.
Yeah.
We're not doing hunting because I can just sit here and imagine the whole environment.
I mean, even if you go now to Divundu as well, that was recently classified as a formal settlement as well, even though it had been a formal settlement before. But Divundu now being like, is it on its way to a
town status?
Town status, yeah. From official village status. So when you look at Divundu in that regard, Divundu will get all its basic services, a post office, a police station, a clinic. It'll start getting a school installed there. And then the thinking is obviously that private sector then comes along and installs a local shop there.
Yeah.
That provides most of the particular conveniences.
Yeah, they already have a few that are installed there.
Yeah, but that's what you've seen happen naturally.
Yeah.
From that particular developmental angle, Helmut, what should then happen next? What's the biggest thing that you probably remember is still lacking in Divundu? Probably tarred roads, ne?
You only have the main ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So branching them out into the... Even Rundu has such an issue. It's another thing, think about it. I'm sorry, Anakleta. But even Rundu has such...
Rural.
No, not Rundu rural. Literally in Rundu, the town of Rundu. If you start going into the neighborhoods, into the designated residential areas, let me say that, because Windhoek is the only place with designated neighborhoods.
I mean, if you're going to branch out into former... I mean, if you're going to branch out in that description... May as well just start talking about Havana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, look, you caught me off guard.
He's decided to keep it, and it's a sink in.
Helmut, look, I'm so glad.
Four-way.
I'm so glad you'll have to define yourself from here to I won't say where Helmut stays, guys, but just know it's not Dwight who said it, ne? But still, yeah. You are right. You are right. But yeah, still getting back to the report. The report itself also does a... I'm a little bit happy.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just stop there. I'll be a little bit, I'm a little bit happy.
Oh yeah. Well, I am too, because, well, like I told you, one of the reasons why I'm so glad we have this report is, and okay, first of all, the reports are coming out because, well, we have the reports. We have not just one report, we have several. I mean, just this is the second one from the same standing committee that we are going through.
Mm.
And, okay, we at least understand what's going on the ground when it comes to green schemes. And these reports are publicly available. So you can just find it on their website.
Yeah.
And if you are telling me, I know, how can I find it? Come on. Seriously. If you can find people without their clothes on the internet, you can find a report. It's not rocket science. You're just not looking enough. So it's the drive that's not there.
Did we have to add that part also, Helmut? What's happening this Friday, Helmut? What's going on?
Just decided to, you know, woke up and chose violence.
Yeah.
Now, so we have the report. It has a few spelling errors, which indicates it wasn't ChatGPT because it would be flawless. So the thing is, the reports are being produced. They're coming out. We can actually understand the state of what's going on the ground. So then it becomes more of a... It also becomes very important, I think, for the regions where the reports are coming from. Mm-hmm. Because they can access this report even for the people that live in and around these conservancies or the green schemes that are, you know, that were provided in the previous report that we went through.
Yeah.
They can go through this and go like, okay, well, I live at Chadikongra. I work in this area. You know, part of this report is actually not accurate because of this and this and this and this. And you can actually do that. But when it comes to this conservancy's report, the first place it took me to, especially on the, previous financial year, the report is from last year. So I'm thinking they're looking at it in 2024-2025 financial year.
Yeah.
Yeah, where about a combined 30 million was made in conservancies, in the Zambezi region alone. Now, when I came across that part, it took me straight to Robin Isherman's guide to the Namibian economy, because one of the things that he's recommending basically in the book that, for small businesses, like if you want to start a business, a good place to start off, and you don't know where to start, tourism would be a brilliant place to start from.
Oh yeah, I forgot. He also mentions that.
Yeah, he recommends that.
Tourism and we've been recommending the whole of last year, tourism should be the easiest of the sectors for any Namibian to start a business in.
I'm looking at what the report finds, especially when it comes to the 29, 30 million that's reported out of the Zambezi region, 2024-2025 financial year.
Mm.
And what Shobhan is recommending in his book. I'm like, okay, there could be some correlation here. Probably more data is needed to basically make a definitive conclusion, but I would actually say Shobhan himself points out that he's been basically studying the Namibian economy for the past like over 30 plus years. So I would assume he knows what he's talking about.
Mm. Which is a good thing. I mean, and the nice thing is also the scope that the oversight committee was looking into was the combination of nature conservation and rural development.
Yeah.
How the two play,
like how they're connected.
How they're connected to each other, how they help each other, and how they also generate the other direct or perceived benefits for rural communities. An interesting thing, obviously, had always been the one particular statement that's made in the report's executive summary, where they mention that Namibia has not generated its own trophy hunter. And I was going like, say that again? Its own trophy hunter. But a trophy hunter is most based upon Helmut. You are paying a fee to hunting lodges or hunting tour guides who have the licenses from the ministry. Because you buy these poaching licenses. hunting licenses.
Oh, so poaching is the illegal one.
Yeah.
Okay.
You buy these hunting licenses, and the Ministry of Environment has prided itself on this sort of like, I don't want to call it, okay, let me rather call it a relationship management situation between themselves and the...
Not Valentine's relationships, right?
No.
Okay.
Well, I mean, in not last year, start of last year, when the ministry had to issue in 2024 statement regarding the culling of
seals.
No, not seals, of selected wildlife from
the one
conservancy.
That generated a lot of noise.
Yeah, but for part of the to be used as part of the drought relief.
Yeah.
For the impact of the rural communities across the country that were suffering from malnutrition, but also those that had been exposed to prolonged periods of drought. In that statement, on the second page, because I still remember it, on the second page, they highlighted that they had already struck for 2025's particular time frame the agreement with a specific sort of like a trophy hunting outfit here in Namibia, which is a business specifically. And from what I've heard and understood is that the country that brings in the most trophy hunters is actually two. It's the Americans and the South Africans that come to us for trophy hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Namibians, it seems, are not keen. I say it seems are not keen on the trophy hunting thing. It's probably because the Namibians can easily say, but we live with the animals here. Why must I go and trophy hunt?
And there's just one part that I think these guys are missing.
Yeah.
Trophy hunting and capana don't really coexist. You know, usually when we shoot something down, we want to eat, not use it for decoration and then starve.
It's even a thing that I grew up with specifically. I mean, do you know how long it takes a family of at least four people, a household, just to consume a leg, the hind quarter, this one hind quarter of a kudu? It takes you a whole month. Do you know how long does it take to boil kudu, to get kudu to be nice and tender and soft, like you would boil, like you would cook or prepare beef and goat and lamb?
Mm-hmm.
Beef and goat and lamb can be ready within an hour.
Yeah.
Kudu, 4 hours on the stove. And that's an electric stove, ne? For it to be nice and tender and soft, 4 hours of cooking.
That's why some of those animals must only be eaten at the village, because that's where firewood comes in handy.
No, some of those animals must just be left there, because eating it would be a nightmare, because who has time to be sitting in front of that fire baking, prying there for 4 hours? Okay, it won't be prying, at least for 2 hours.
Well, who has time? I think I have an answer. A Namibian who is hungry? Have you seen our...
Remember, that's the thing that the current government wants to change. They want to change that living off the land situation.
Look, until they do.
Unfortunately.
4 hours is going to be nothing.
with a glass of homebrew.
Yeah. Throwing stories and
you know, gossip about which moth, decided to cause issues for which grasshopper, stuff like that. Yeah, I know, yeah. But yeah, you are right, Helmut. So, currently right now, the particular perspective that the standing committee took on that, in that one line, okay, it doesn't throw, for example, for someone like me, it doesn't throw me off track. It just creates a question mark in that statement.
Yeah.
Why would you make such a statement to say, we haven't produced our own trophy hunters? Maybe because it's not Namibians who want to be trophy hunting. And just like you said, you would not see the need for someone who can buy their food to go and shoot their food and then have
it for decoration.
And then have a bust of the animal in your house. It just looks weird. This is not the 1980s.
Actually, I have one more question. You know, the process of making it appear that way.
What's his name? You take it to a, what is the person's name? I almost said dermatologist.
Seriously?
Yeah, it's the other name.
Dermatologist, you want to give it what? Facelift?
What's the other person's name? What is that process's name?
So, of like driving it and making it like a void of moisture so that it doesn't spoil.
Yeah, and then they treat the pelt and then they create that technically sculpture of that animal. It's uh-huh. what they use for museums as well. I know that business because that you see that business's post their logo on the way of the highway as you're driving on your way if you're on the highway on mm-hmm. on what's the highway's name?
B1
on your way specifically to either La France or to directly to Okahania, you will see the business from the highway. Even if you're at the B1 city complex, you will at least see they've got like a massive billboard.
Uh-huh.
And you will see it there. But I can't remember. Why can't I remember?
So there are service providers that will actually just, how do I put this? Like dry it for you if you want to use it for decoration.
Yeah. And all the game lodges use that business. That's what I've heard. They all use that guy. That specific business that I'm just now forgot what the name of the profession is.
Look, the thing is, if I was to go hunting, for example, and then, you know, the whole idea of trophy, you know, of using the head of an animal that I have just shot down as a, as a decoration. Now I have to, you know, there'll be two debates going on in my head. One says, you know, in the pot it's delicious. One says on the wall it's beautiful. And more often the pot being delicious wins.
Most of the time, the pot being delicious wins. And in some cases, you even find yourself like in my family, they would have gone like, "Ish, this is too much meat, man." Yeah, let's make biltong.
You know what your relatives will say?
And then they start making biltong.
You know what your relatives will say every time they will visit you and there's no food in your house, but there's a head there staring at you?
No, they will go like, that looks nice, but where's the meat?
Uh-huh.
I know, Helmut. I know. We are all African. We ask that question. Uh-huh. Where's the meat? Why didn't I see some of it? And then it's even like.
And you have a buffalo on you.
And the relatives are like, it's like your mom and her sister, relatives. And she's like, now why didn't you send me some of the meat? Why are you like this?
and it's
a whole emotional manipulation situation there because people are seeing a new feature in the living room and asking, so where's the meat?
Decoration is the last thing that I think of. They're
just gonna jump to where's the meat?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm just, it's not a major, point to be sidetracked on, but it's just an odd point to bring out specifically. I mean.
Yeah, really odd.
Yeah. Namibians being trophy hunters as Namibians, it is not impossible. It can be done. But if you guys know what goes into being a trophy hunting is literally hunting for sport. Trophy hunting is not hunting to what we know it. And then it becomes an unsustainable activity.
Yeah, definitely. That's part of... Actually, that's the...
That's what trophy hunting is. Trophy hunting is for sport. Trophy hunting is not...
Translation, you have enough food at home and you are just hunting because you are bored.
Man, Helmut, if you see a Vormanbrok there in Divundu and you've got you live in the lodge right next to the town, But you will still come to the shop in the town.
Yeah.
Because the question would still be, why? Why must you not go through the pain of getting the license, killing knowing which animal to kill? Because you can't just kill any.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be a cow. It shouldn't be a young cow that's pregnant. It shouldn't be like a young bull or a young cow of any of the antelope and herbivore species. You need to make sure this is... either an oldish animal that is no longer of childbearing time frame and stuff like that. And obviously, knowing us Namibians, we would not care about those particular points.
Nah.
Yeah. But anyway, so, just moving on to the next particular point. So, trophy hunting aside, I actually think, Helmut, that community-based resource, natural resource management actually creates a lot more money. Mm-hmm. I know that only a handful of conservancies were visited in this August visit. In this August visit.
That's why Namibians don't want to do it.
Guys, well, the reason why I'm laughing, you know, just sporadically, is because Helmut showed me a story of an American trophy hunter in South Africa who was killed by the buffalo he was trying to shoot.
Yeah, so the hunter became the hunted.
Well, there's a lovely video that I also saw once on social media specifically of, but it was these social media videos, you know, when people circulate the video, continue sharing. And there was, it was a South African one, once again, and they were trophy hunting a leopard.
Of all things.
Of all things, they were trophy hunting a leopard. Now, it's the South African that's in the video is the owner of the lodge, this white guy, and a guy that has to shoot the American, the guy that has to shoot, cause they tell you where the animal is.
Yeah.
The guide. And sometimes also the owner of the hunting lodge would go with. Because you need to know about these safety things and hazardous circumstances, and you need an extra set of eyes. There might be a massive elephant here in the bush that decides to tackle the bucky that you're sitting in and stuff like that. So, like the elephant bull that picked up the tour bus in South Africa last year, picked up the bus, Helmut, literally. And you could hear the Khoza or the Zulu guide going like, Hanman, Hanman! He's shouting at the elephant. That elephant bull didn't care. Homer was busy practicing, you know, he was busy doing it's almost like someone practicing that, you know, how to lift something, you know, something heavy. And using that lorry, that truck, to do that. And he lifts it from the front, and then he drops the truck. And there are tourists in the
CT area. You can imagine the screaming.
They were terrified. They were terrified. But anyway. So the video was, now they point at where the leopard is.
Mm-hmm.
And the American, the tourist misses the first shot.
Uh-huh.
And because the owner of the game farm says, if you're going to shoot, first shot must be the shot.
Uh-huh.
American misses the second shot and the leopard starts charging. And it was the third shot. And as it's here, like within the 5 meter radius, a lodge owner grabbed the rifle and literally had to shoot. But he was super annoyed at the hunter, at the trophy hunter. Because he said, when we tell you to take your shot, take it immediately. Make sure it is a shot that lands. I'm sorry guys for depicting it that way, but specifically, these are the things, the realities that happen in these.
Has he fired a gun before?
He's American.
Oh yeah.
It's the only country where the general public is armed way better than the police.
All I'm saying is there's a big difference between trophy hunting and school shooting.
There's also a big difference between being a gangster in New York.
Oh yeah.
Or trying to feature like 50 Cent.
So at the end, at the end of the day, the leopard was killed. No one was hurt, minus the leopard, of course.
Yeah, minus the leopard.
Yeah.
But there was a major risk of obviously being
harmed,
being mauled by a leopard.
Okay, I think, this is just a business idea I'm putting out there.
As a local, as a fellow local, Helmut,
I
would tell you it's not worth the risk.
No, it's not worth the risk, but for those that are operating already, for grocery, not groceries, you know, retail stores, those of you that sell diapers, have you tried, you know, giving some of them to trophy hunters? Because, well, they more often find themselves in situations where they could use them.
Yeah, and obviously in many...
Like that guy that missed 3 shots of a charging leopard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the obvious big concern here is, Helmut, Namibia is getting noticed day by day more and more by international visitors who, in the meantime, if you go look at what has happened to American tourism statistics.
Yeah.
Now, remember, I mentioned that back in last year, that around the world, other countries don't measure the tourism sector as a standalone sector. They don't, for some reason. Not even South Africa does that. But it's only when you come to Namibia, where Namibia has designated the tourism sector as being a standalone sector, easy to operate, you know, to get market entry to, easy to establish yourself, and easy to participate in. Other countries take the tourism sector as a facilitating sector behind the
establishment. More of a peripheral around something that they have as a main.
Yeah. Let's use more peripheral. Now, they tallied or they measured up the impact of Trump's particular chaotic policies, specifically the tariff policy and specifically the visa, the immigration policies, where the biggest tourist that the Americans had was the Canadian. That the Canadians are now just staying away. That mostly European tourists are now asking the question, why must I pay such an excessive visa fee? Remember, for us Namibians, it's what?
250,000.
What was that amount? Was it 13,000 US or 3,000 US?
You know, I have no idea. That's how broke I am.
But I calculated it like something like 250,000 Namibian dollars. If you have 250 grand just lying around as a Namibian, sure, go to the US. You won't even get through immigration because then they'll be suspicious of you. So you won't even be able to go on your way into the rest of the greater US. But anyway, the US has lost close to 20%
of its tourism,
of annual tourism activity. Small businesses are obviously closing in the US that relied on tourism. And it has a major impact. However, don't think of it as what happened under COVID, that all tourism was equally impacted.
Mm-hmm.
This is now tourism under when politicians don't think things straight, that a consumer just goes like, okay, I'll go somewhere else. So now they're going to places, they're discovering places like Namibia, they don't care whether Trump has issues with South Africa. They will go to South Africa. There's now a lot more Americans and Canadians going to South Africa. And obviously when they go to South Africa, they hear about us. Now we've got people. It said they literally went and made a YouTube video about the iShowSpeed Nigeria Namibia Twitter war.
Twitter feud.
I was like, really? Is this something? Do people really do this? But anyway. So you'll start seeing Namibia becoming more and more mainstream out there in the tourism world.
Mm-hmm.
Now remember, the Natural Resources Committee visit in August last year. We are in February 2026.
Mm-hmm.
So things could also have improved between August last year and up to now. Yeah. So we obviously still have to see where things are going, even in this first three month period of 2026. So it's still early days.
All right, we're 25 minutes into the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, you are listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. Before we continue, let's take a break. Please do stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
And welcome back to Home Run, your drive time show with your favorite duo. Whether I like it or not, we're a favorite duo. with your favorite duo, that's Helmut and Dwight. Before we continue, let's take a live read. Get your kicks from ShopRite Liquor Shops, Smirnoff 1818 Original Vodka for only 159 Namibian dollars and 99 cents. Harrier's Whiskey and Gordon's Dry Gin for 179 Namibian dollars and 99 cents each. KWV 3-year-old Brandy for 199 Namibian dollars and 99 cents. Richelieu Brandy for 189 Namibian dollars and 99 cents. And J&B Scotch Whiskey for just 239 Namibian dollars and 99 cents. Please don't drink and drive. ShopRite Liquor Shops care. We continue with the conservancies. So let's backtrack a little bit back to where I'm merging this report to what Shobhan says in his guide to the Namibian economy. Just in the executive summary of the report, you have the report represents a committee's finding from its visit to conservancies focusing on the role of community-based natural resources management. Mm. Programs in empowering rural communities and how conservancies contribute to wildlife management, ecotourism, and related natural resources enterprises. Now, this has been proven by the conservancies in the Zambezi region. The conservancies in the Zambezi region have made a combined income of $30 million in the previous financial year. This report is come from 2025. So this is not 2024-2025 financial year. Now, the report highlights positive impacts such as increased community participation in decision making, revenue generation. That's where the $30 million now comes in as basically a reference of that revenue generation. Mm. Revenue generation through tourism and trophy hunting. And the creation of employment opportunities. It also outlines key challenges. Now, this is a, when it comes to challenges in this, in this industry, you just have to scroll one, scroll two, and there was human wildlife conflict.
But they will always ask the question about human wildlife.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a difficult thing, Helmut, to try and understand specifically that most of our human wildlife conflict happens in communal land areas, which are where traditional authorities are based.
Yeah.
And in many cases, the human wildlife conflict is also a scenario where you've largely got Dwight standing there with his five cattle deciding to go and drink at the same waterhole where the whole pride of lions that operate in the national park are also drinking from. Now, you're either putting up massive stake signs, you know, from Madagascar when Alex, was this close to losing his marbles, and then he started seeing everyone as miniature stakes running around.
Do you
remember that scene?
especially his friend.
When he decided, let me just bite into one of these stakes that are just here close by. And then he was asked, what are you doing? And then he says, no, I just wanted to make sure that if you have all the stripes here on your thigh. So sure, go ahead, operate like that. Go and find out specifically how wildlife operate. I'm not obviously saying that it's bad that, cattle herders should stay away from potential accessible grazing land. Mm-hmm. But we even heard from the Green Scheme situation that it was the cattle herders that broke down, remember the fences around Kalimbeza, mm-hmm. to gain access to herding or grazing in the Green Scheme's premises.
Yeah.
Now, if people don't understand what trespassing is, then I don't know in that scenario. But in the conservancy area, in the communal land areas, where you find a lot of these conservancies also being based in to help with tourism activity, to help with income generation, is that unfortunately, people have way of life and people have another activity. And another activity and way of life will find a way to clash somehow.
It's a good thing you mentioned that the whole sort of like a dispute between conservancy areas and and the cattle farmers in these areas, because anyone that has now you have to understand that the whole concept of conservancy is a fundamentally new one. But cattle herding basically predates conservancies, especially in a lot of areas around here. So that means this, what you are calling conservancy areas today, there are a lot of people that will run into that will tell you that this was our grazing area. So now that means the Ministry of Environment and Ministry of Agriculture, they must have a conversation again. And that conversation is around how their practices impact each other's, job descriptions.
Yeah.
So, if you look at it, someone who is farming, who is doing animal husbandry, even if it's on a subsistence level, what they are doing is, for them, like you just pointed out, that's a way of life. They have this large chunk of land that was a grazing area at some point, but now it's inaccessible. This area is obviously bringing out benefits, directly if you are employed there or indirectly somehow. But the bottom line is, it's kind of sort of like a tricky for a lot of people to connect the two, the benefits they are drawing out and the loss that they have incurred by the fact that they cannot access that piece of land anymore, especially for grazing purposes. So that means, the practice of agriculture must change. Yeah, from relying on a large portion of land that you are just going to be taking your cattle to on a daily basis, to alternative feeding methods of your animals. Now, when you're talking about subsistence farming, we still do things pretty much very traditional. So we still take our animals to go and drink water at most. I know that most, if not all, the people that are along the Kavango River, their animals drink water at the river, where you have now a lot of hazards like crocodiles. And these things do happen.
And here's a weird thing in here, Helmut, of the Puan wildlife conflict, and specifically around the compensation for the damaged crops.
Oh yeah, that's one of those things.
Where it's highlighted,
there have been some delays.
Yeah. Besides the delays, the quantity per impacted person whose crops were damaged could be 40,000 per person. And this is going as far back as 2023 that the Ministry of Environment knew about this, but the particular plight of human wildlife conflict.
This is not a loss of life. This is crops damage.
Crops damage because elephants walk through the area, and
all they just have to do is walk, and your crops,
you and everything else. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the downside is a question of. Okay, I know, this is Zambezi, and that in this is the Zambezi region. It's a pretty narrow region. I'm going to say something that will probably have a lot of people from Zambezi, including Franz and Abigail, angry at me. But if things are as confined as they are there in that region is pretty small. It's not the smallest. I think it's not the smallest versus...
No, it's not the smallest.
Versus, I think it's... I suspect it's Oshana that's the smallest. Oshana or Musati. One of the two regions. There's another region. So Oshana or Anguena. No, Oshana's pretty big. It's pretty massive. It's the one that included that has Tsumep in it. Anguena is also slightly bigger. So it would be Omusati and what's the other one's name?
Now when it comes to the smallest, you're right on Oshana.
Is it Oshana?
Yeah.
Now who's the one that includes Tsumep in it?
I would say, it's either, you have Oshana or Anguena. Because this is more like just strips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like those two actually smaller than the Zambezi.
Way smaller. Yeah.
Just the average small, but, in size, Zambezi is still big.
Yeah.
In comparison to those two, yeah.
Yeah. So... Zambezi has limitations specifically in its own size. So the concern here would be, What do you do to get people out of harm's way? Helmut, I 50 years from now, and it will obviously be 20, where are we now? 2026. It'll obviously be 2076 from now. We will still have a human wildlife conflict if a scenario of rural development in earnest doesn't take place from the regional council of Zambezi. Meaning, bring an activity to the people that they can make direct money from, and then in some way or another, they don't have to face the particular threat of elephants deciding to just, you know, gallivant. And then, I remember just now.
How's that?
Zambezi forms part of the CASA program. So the CASA program sees the elephants walk like this in a circle between Namibia,
Botswana,
Angola, Botswana, and Zambia.
Yeah.
Angola was brought into this CASA situation as well. Because of the habits of elephants. Elephants follow hundreds and hundreds of years of knowledge passed
migratory
down.
Migratory
patterns that they were shown where to go for, firstly, watering holes, secondly, for grazing, and they walk in a circular pattern, meaning they walk through these four countries I mentioned.
Actually, now that you mention it.
Now, I've had
it's a wild animal thing, including wild birds.
Yes.
Yeah, now, when it's winter here, most of them are in sub parts of Spain or Turkey.
Exactly. And when it's summer this side and winter that side, they come to us.
Yeah.
Now, the downside is, Helmut, we are having this conversation where the Ministry of Environment, for sure, and Ministry of Agriculture, for sure, know about the migratory patterns of the wild animals. However, we've got concerns of the humans who obviously wish to make a permanent settlement.
Yeah.
In a communal land area, which they were given close to this conservancy, or in this conservancy that is a communal land area because they blend into each other. And you forget that there are elephants. And remember, the elephants, consider elephants to be icebreakers. Elephants open up the path.
The path for all the other
for
animals.
For all the other the animals. Migration. Which also includes the predators.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sitting here in Windhoek, Helmut, with tears in the denim blue eyes that I do not own. Nah. Why are we not advising specifically the Namibians in these rural communities about, you know what, don't go and set up things in the pathway where these elephants are going to come through?
Now, I think part of the problem is when we started adopting, I think, the whole idea of fencing of animals, breaking their migration idea, culture that they're basically accustomed to.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to move. So we started fencing them off. I think that's where, you know, conservancies come in. I think there's a part we didn't think through, and that is, there's a way that things happen here. Animals are going to migrate, and, people still practice shifting cultivation because we don't provide fertilizer in a way that, you know, to the crops in a way that commercial farmers do. So that means you farm a portion of land, and when it loses its fertility, people move to a whole, you know, to a new different area. Now, when there were no fencing off of national parks, game parks, and conservancies, that was not a problem. Except now, it is a big one. So, because now you have farmers that want to practice the way that, you know, farming the way that they only know how, the traditional way that they know how. So, farm a portion of land, and if when the fertility is depleted, move to a different portion of land.
Now, let me
and
stop
you have
me.
Animals.
Now, let me stop you there.
Yeah.
That moving.
Yeah.
That's what in China does not happen.
Yeah.
There where you find yourself as a village.
Mm-hmm.
You stay there.
Yeah.
You don't move anywhere else.
No, you're not moving as a village.
Yeah.
You are moving, you're moving your field.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'm also saying. You with your field, you stay where you are.
Now, they have alternative, obviously, watering and soil fertilization methods in place.
Yeah.
Except I don't think we, I don't think we thought of that here before we started fencing off all these areas, because you have to understand, yes, there are benefits that are coming out of these conservancies, but again, one thing that cannot be ignored is the conflict that is coming out now, not just the human wildlife conflict, but also the the conflict between the people living around these areas when it comes to grazing land. This conservancy is a new, conservancy concept is a very new one. Mm. Before you call it conservancy, there's an uncle, there's a grandpa out there that called that area a playing ground, literally. That's exactly. Where they went, that's where they went looking after cattle, looking after goats. Now it's all fenced off and they have animals here that needs grazing a land and they don't have access to that grazing land. I think that's part of the problem why we have now, especially a lot of, parts of Namibia where you don't have the, a perennial water source that's bordering between Namibia and Angola.
Yeah.
They can go, they can take their cattle to, to graze them in Angola. And when they bring them here, you have some serious, cross-border disease transmission issues that we are dealing with.
Which is the foot and mouth.
We didn't think it through.
No, we didn't. But we're going to take a short live read and we come back. Vevitcha University, where the 2026 applications are now extended for the Faculty of Health Sciences. Certificate in Health Science Foundation, Diploma in Environmental Health Science, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Master of Science in Occupational Health and Safety, and for the Master of Public Health. For more information, call 081-403-6406. Vevitcha University, where everyone is an achiever.
So, I say it's somewhat of an implementation lack of oversight. Because, walking people through what's going to happen, you can imagine sitting there going like, now this part of, this piece of land that was used for grazing, we are going to fence this off, we are going to fence it off and use it for conservancy. Now, that's an environmental protection mechanism. Yeah. That's very good for the Minister of Environment, except for the guys that are practicing, animal husbandry, who now falls under the Ministry of Agriculture. It's not a, it stops being a benefit animal husbandry wise for them.
Yeah.
And it starts being, it starts being a benefit, at least environmental protection wise. I think what we did not fail to account for is that now that we are fencing off this area, where are these people going to be, where are the cattle of these people going to be grazing?
Yeah.
If they, unless there's an alternative area that they're going to take their animals to graze at, a new training maybe of alternative feeding methods of this, of the animal they have must be brought in. Did we do that?
That's not a big million
dollar question. That's a million dollar question.
Yeah, that's the big million dollar question. The concern obviously here is, Helmut, is there should be a balance achieved primarily in terms of the human wildlife conflict discussion.
Yeah.
One thing I do know in terms of how these conservancies generated the cash, a lot of income and a lot of cash, is primarily through the trophy hunting mechanisms, but also through the aspect that the, I don't know if they are the top game farms or the top sort of like game lodges in Namibia, but that a lot of these game lodges are most positioned on the borders of these game, of these conservancy areas.
Yeah.
So that you've got the accommodation facility outside of the conservancy area, but it actually has an access point to the conservancy area for the tourists to go and see the game, to have a game drive through the particular conservancy and be shown all the particular natural resources contained within there.
Yeah.
At the heart of this, there is obviously going to be a local conflicting elements, specifically that you've got those animal those particular animal husbandry practices of the locals where they still want to have their cattle,
yeah,
where they still want to grow their little field of some crop, which obviously the elephants decide, thank you for the snack. I'm going to be on my way. I'm not going to compensate you. You can ask your government for compensation. And yeah, but the gist of this particular discussion should be, who's doing the literal community education on the ground? Is it the responsibility of the traditional authorities to be talking to the people within, which, who are fellow Namibians, by the way?
Yeah.
And I'm sorry for using what this other example, but do you remember the Chindo brothers, the Nchindo brothers that was killed by the Botswana Defense Forces during COVID? When you go and read, you know, what came out between Nampol and the Botswanan authorities regarding that particular event is that the Botswanans were claiming that the brothers were on the side
of the territory of Botswana.
Were in Botswana. They had, now the thing is, according to this, the treaty between Namibia and Botswana was that one of the islands supposedly that were identified, and this is where the narrative game started playing off. The local residents of the village, which is pretty close to that, to the Okavango Delta, was claiming that they know where the border ends.
But it's a border issue.
It was a border issue.
It quickly becomes a border issue.
And the Botswanan guys were claiming that, you know, the brothers were acting like, literally like, what do you call it? They were acting like poachers do. You know, they keep quiet. Supposedly they asked, who's there, identify yourself, and the guys didn't respond. They didn't say anything.
And so that's from the BDF now.
Yeah, that's on the BDF's account. And the local Namibians that had the demonstrations here in Windhoek, because I covered those demonstrations in 2020, were citing that the brothers told their mother that and their sister or their youngest brother that they were going to go and catch fish, because all three of the brothers were somehow connected to the tourism industry before it collapsed in 2020. Now, in such a particular scenario, Helmut, where you've, and remember the Okavango Delta can be considered as one massive sort of like nature reserve / conservancy area, because parts of it obviously overlaps into Namibia in the Zambezi side and into, what's that region's name? Is it Kavango? Kavango West? No, Kavango East. It overlaps into Kavango East?
Kavango Delta.
No, it's Kavango East.
I'm saying what overlaps in Kavango East, the Kavango Delta.
Yeah. Because Namibia is a small part, a very small part of it, but the largest part of it obviously lies in
Botswana.
Yeah. So in that, and that's also one of the particular areas, is that some of the elephants that roam in that area of Botswana also move through Namibia, through Kavango West. Through Kavango East and through Zambezi for that matter, in the Kaza, as they call it, the Kaza area. Now, when you go and analyze these particular sort of like these details, you obviously sit with the discussion there of, okay, so there's a lot of natural resources happening there.
Yeah.
Probably also why the supposed oil exploration was also targeted there. Whether or not things are actually happening, I don't want to say we don't know. It's a safe bet to say we don't know.
Yeah.
Because it's been 5 years, but the Shell and Total guys are moving faster.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just say that. The Shell and Total guys are moving faster.
I'm with Shobhan on this one. Always take it with a pinch of salt.
Gulp is moving a lot faster even.
Mm-hmm.
The Portuguese.
Actually, the one in Kavango Delta, don't take that one with a pinch of salt. I would say take that one with a bucket of salt.
Bucket? I'll say take the whole salt factory with you for the extra spice. But yeah, before we continue, guys, we'll take a short live read.
Get your kicks from ShopRite Liquor Shops, Smirnoff 1818 Original Vodka for only 159 Namibian dollars and 99 cents. Harrier's Whiskey and Gordon's Dry Gin for only 179 Namibian dollars and 99 cents each. KWV 3-year-old Brandy for only 199 Namibian dollars and 99 cents. Richelieu Brandy for only 189 Namibian dollars and 99 cents. and JNB Scotch Whiskey for just $239.99 each. Please don't drink and drive. ShopRite Liquor Shops care. We are 18 minutes into the hour of, eight minutes left to the hour of six. 8 minutes left to the hour of six. That will obviously bring us into business and economic segments. So that means that's about the time we have to wrap things up. So conservancies, you know, it's one of those actually, you know, until this report came out and we started having this discussion, I thought the Minister of Environment and the Minister of Agriculture only have like that one point of more like they have this you know, some type of contradiction going on where the like it was emphasized in the Office of the Auditor General's report that the fertilizer being used by the Minister of Agriculture to help Namibia, you know, reach its goal of food security is harming the environment, which is creating obviously you know, not just creating a problem for a problem for the Minister of Environment to solve, also making their their job difficult, because if the problem wasn't created, they wouldn't be having the problem in the first place. Now on the list of that one problem, you can add on another problem, which is conservancies. Now you have conservancies that are obviously serving a very positive purpose, like it was obviously emphasized in the report, that there's a lot of community participation, there's some degree of employment being created, there's a lot of revenue generation. Those are all positives with regards to associated with conservancies and the people that are in and around these areas.
Yeah,
that's a positive. Except now when you start looking at it from, from human wildlife conflict, we are back again to the conversation that obviously, you know, that, interesting the relationship that the Ministry of Agriculture and the Ministry of Environment have, where in the fertilizer discussion from the Office of the Auditor General's report, it seems like the Minister of Agriculture is creating problems for the Minister of Environment. But in this one, with all the fencing of areas that leaving a lot of people with not enough grazing land left, and then you bring in all the animal wildlife conflict, you begin to see a tiny bit of a problem being created by the Minister of Environment for the Minister of Agriculture. So this one heck of a relationship.
It's not just that relationship is that toxic also.
You really had to take it there.
Throw it in there. Yeah, just put it in a shot somewhere, you know, a rub shot somewhere. But yeah, it's also that the relationship has a lot of misunderstandings. Yeah, we guys would know that.
Believe me.
About misunderstandings.
Uh-huh.
So when you look at this particular scenario, yes, this oversight committee went to go find out something, but when you bring in a truly analytical perspective from a policy or performance perspective, there's a performance report, Almut, that the OAG had authored. We'll decide where in next week to put that report in.
Yeah,
it's a lovely one because it's actually a gem of a report. It's literally a gem of a report.
Oh boy!
But yeah, so when we've got a view, what's actually manifesting from what we're seeing, and I hate this word manifestation because it makes me sound like one of those spiritual people.
Oh yeah,
you know, must manifest somewhere. You don't know where, but
it's just an English word that I think it's been overused in the in religious circles. Right, like now when you mention the word, everyone is thinking along those lines. Yeah.
For just too much
yeah.
Or just too long. But yeah, so when it materializes, yeah, even better word. When it materializes, you've got a view. The particular mandate that the Ministry of Environment has, and the particular sort of like backup singer roles that ministries of mines and energy plays, Ministry of Agriculture plays, Ministry of, who's the other one, of Health plays, because the environment also has a health
component because to it. There's what's this also referenced in the report. Devil's Clause.
That too.
Which also has a pharmaceutical applications.
That too, which is a good point that you also brought up, because back in 2024, I attended a particular engagement by the Spanish embassy. Okay, they just sort of like were to the entity that works with UNAM, you know, about natural products from nature to enhance the opportunity for communities or rural communities to literally leverage from this particular resources, which is some things like Devil's Claw.
Yeah.
There's another particular, it's not just Devil's Claw. What's the other one's name? It's Devil's Claw and,
just placed more emphasis on Devil's Claws.
Okay, but we also have like the aloe vera species.
Oh, yeah, aloe vera is also recommended.
But because Devil's Claw is also like a specific kind of a byproduct of the plant. But anyway, and in that discussion of 2024, they invited a UNAM lecturer who looked at, from the Nature Conservation Department of theirs, who in one of her research studies, she cited specifically that there was five guys that monopolized the whole Devil's Claw trade in Namibia. But they would literally gain access to the license, and three of the five were foreigners, and they would literally make millions from selling the Devil's Claw to German pharmaceutical companies. You remember this discussion? Yeah, you and I had it.
Yeah.
And I remember that day it was, Herta was with me at the same event. And I sat there going like, yo, five guys.
Yep.
Just five guys were making a killing from selling. And all they would do is they would just renew their license the next year, go to the same spot, because your license says when you renew it, you can only harvest at the same spot.
Mm-hmm.
You can't harvest at another spot. They would just go back to the same spot a year later, harvest, and make a killing the next year. So every year they made this particular killing, and they would be gaining access to this resource almost nothing. But here's where things get tricky, Hamud. And this is always the big discussion that goes on out there, which even the oversight report mentions. The oversight report speaks of, the local community doesn't know about the value of each animal species within the conservancy. However, that the guys that negotiate the licenses with the ministry and with the hunting licenses now and with the trophy hunters know the value of each animal species.
Yeah.
Now, right there and then, it should tell you most
serious problems.
Start talking to the ministry and ask them the value of each animal. Get knowledge. Knowledge is power. That's why you see that particular statement still rings through 100 years later. Knowledge is power. Start reading. Start getting knowledge. Now, here's the thing also, like with the Devil's Claw situation. Those five guys had the customers. Do you think a rural community person has the capability of to go and get the same caliber customer?
Mm-hmm.
I would say yes, but in reality, it's a no. Yes, in theory, you can get the same customer, Helmut, in theory. But you have to say, in theory, yes. In reality, it's a definite no.
You're going to have to jump through a lot of hoops.
Yeah, and you'll have to go and find out who's the right people. But before we continue, guys, let's take a quick live read. Velvice University for the 2026 applications that are now extended for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following courses. Certificate in Health Science Foundation, Diploma in Environmental Health Science, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Master of Science in Occupational Health and Safety, and Master of Public Health. For more information, call 081-403-6406. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever.
Just a minute into the hour of six, and yours truly, King David, can pop in at any time. So that brings us to the end of the conservancy discussion. There's obviously the Ministry of Environment and Agriculture. This is something that I mean, they have their experts. This is not something they should, they should listen to from a comedian slash radio presenter coming from somewhere in Windhoek. But, you can imagine they're trying to strike a balance here between, providing and, having these conservancies in place and also, dealing with the problems like the whole, animal wildlife conflict and, the dispute over grazing land on, and stuff like that. Yeah, but, conservancies came with their own benefits, but also like everything else, it comes with the pros and cons. 2 minutes into David's time, and he's here. That brings us to the end of Home Run for today, and you all have a wonderful weekend.
And on that side, dear listeners, stay tuned for the next program after the break. David has got a lot of paperwork here in front of him for some reason. David, where are you going to a meeting?
Decided to go traditional.
To look official was just paperwork.
Yeah.
Look at David. He's even making noise. He's even making noise.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah. On that note, guys, stay tuned for the next program.